Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt. Happy Wednesday. It's a, I'm going to call it a weird Wednesday because for the first time in a while, Stephen, I mean, we'll probably mention the Toronto Maple Leafs at some point during this program, but there's nothing that stands out as like we I know the boys just did a 2-hour Toronto Maple Leafs show.
They did do that. And you did just mention them.
I did. But yeah. It's not on my lineup as like one of the points of the topics of discussion for today. And it's been a while since the Maple Leafs have been out of the forefront of our sporting consciousness.
I think they have been today's top story for quite some time, have they not? It's an unbroken run. Well, it's now broken.
Yeah, they've relinquished top spot on this program.
But I guess, the boys went through the entire farm system, right? So we're not going to do that, are we? They did it for us. Yeah. Apparently they said it stinks.
It does. What is good about the Toronto Maple Leafs organization at this point? You know what? They're very loyal. That's what I would say.
They are very
loyal. That's you cannot fault their loyalty. No,
that's true. They're dancing with the ones that brung them.
That's absolutely right. All right. Yeah, it's funny how I said we're not going to talk about the Maple Leafs, but there's almost 2 minutes on the Toronto Maple Leafs. All right. Today's top story brought to you by Thornhill Toyota. Your local Toyota store since 1969. Come for the history, stay for the future. Dufferin, north of Steeles, is the Toronto Blue Jays.
Mm-hmm.
And the crazy thing about this sport that is played every single day is that you can go from the horrors that preceded the last couple of days to now you can say the Blue Jays have won 3 of their last 4, and they have their first series win since May 1st. And there was no greater example of like the thing that I keep talking about, the regression to the mean when it comes to runners in scoring position, then George Springer's duck snort to right field that scores 3 in a triple.
A triple. Bases clearing triple that counts just the same as if it had been a screaming line drive off the top of the wall that had turned into a triple.
Yeah.
So it's funny baseball that way. I think they're owed a couple of those this year.
I agree.
There have been a lot of hard hit shots to the warning track in this deadish ball era. Sometimes you get lucky, you know. Now you still have to have a decent pitching performance in that game, a very good starting pitching performance from Berríos. And your bullpen, your undermanned bullpen at this point still has to come through for you. A bunch of things still kind of had to happen, but yeah, it was a weird sigh of relief moment, wasn't it? Bases loaded. Oh, okay. Here we go again. How are they going to, how are they going to find a way to make that last out the inning and not cash them in, any of them in, and you end up cashing them in on a jam shot that, you know, that contact with that pitch 99 times out of 100 results in a pop-up.
Yeah. Oh, I should have checked the expected batting average on that, but I guarantee you it was under 100.
Not that high. Yes, no. Not all that high, but it counts. And you're right. It just feels, because of the Leafs being the overwhelming top story for the last God knows how long, it took a little bit of the heat off this tough stretch for the Jays.
No, it's a good point.
And, but, you know, it, Now they have the local scene all to themselves again, and the schedule is going to help them out a whole lot too. That's the other thing this have. This is not a very good Seattle team right now. Pretty good starting pitcher last night.
Yes, first round pick. Yeah, he looked pretty
great.
Logan Gilbert.
He looked excellent, and he could feel like maybe he deserves a slightly better fate. Mm-hmm. But the Seattle followed by Cincinnati stretch here is going to probably just take a little bit of the heat off.
I have the expected batting average actually on that was 370. So I guess there's a lot of people that get bloop singles out of the launch angle and exit velocity of that triple to right field off the bat of George Springer. Yeah, no, the worm is turning for this Blue Jays team. It helps that you have Kevin Gausman going tonight too as you look for your first series sweep of the season. And then you got the absolutely abominable Cincinnati Reds with Joey Votto, apparently, who's going to make his return to the Reds lineup for that series opener on Friday.
Yeah.
And is doing a media availability right now with the Toronto faithful.
Which is interesting. Mm-hmm. He's not a guy that's necessarily always relished the opportunities to do media, but he's a very interesting guy sometimes when he does media, and especially the whole Toronto thing. It's, Joey Votto has never seemed that sentimental about the hometown, especially the home team.
Mm-hmm.
But, it's kind of feeling like the Joey Votto farewell tour this year, isn't it?
Boy, it is. It won't be because his contract extends beyond this year.
No, it will not.
But yeah, what we saw from Joey Votto before he ended up on, I think he's still on the COVID IL, is what he's currently rehabbing from. But yeah, that didn't look anything like the guy that I advocated for trading for before the season. But we'll see if he has better things in store. Back to the game yesterday quickly, just for a second, because you mentioned Berríos. Fine start by him. And he hasn't looked abominable. He hasn't looked horrible. The numbers were pretty bad. And the numbers remain, like, at all-time career worst for him across a number of different categories.
Well, especially swing and miss.
Yeah, K percentage, career low. Hard hit rate, a career high. And OPS against, like, anybody average batter that faces José Berríos, even after yesterday's performance, is OPSing about 800. And there's examples across baseball. Man, we were looking at the Marcus Semien baseball reference page today. There are examples of guys that signed big contracts and maybe under the weight of the expectations of those contracts failed to perform. And it's nothing like what Marcus Semien is going. Did I say Stroman? But
Said Semien. You're right. No, and well, so today is what is the today is May the 18th. So he had a tough April last year, where two thirds of the way through May, and he's so far underwater, it's unbelievable.
He has yet to hit a home run, and you look at some of the advanced stats that they have. There's no indication there that there's a progression to the mean for Marcus Semien. So does that have something to do with signing like an absurdly rich contract for almost a decade for a player who's in his 30s, maybe? I wouldn't have said that the same was true of José Berríos, but you know, season opener, under the bright lights, his worst start ever. There's also some mitigating circumstances there. I mean, the start in Cleveland in the horrible temperatures and the rain, and then the start in the Bronx at Yankee Stadium. A couple of bloops, and then the Yankee Stadium special to right field. But yeah, I think if things continued down that trajectory, if he had another start like that and the ERA was still up approaching six, I think then you start getting into question territory. So that was much needed for him yesterday.
Yeah, well, you'd be in the question. The first question you would be asking is about his health.
Yeah.
Right? Is he right? This José Berríos is different than the guy that came over last year and the guy for most of his career. He's a different kind of pitcher, but you know, that may well be by necessity. Like last night, the curveball was brilliant, right? Yep. He was living on a curveball, and there's not many, it's not something you see every night in the modern game, but you know, he was effective pitching through and around that lineup, kept him off balance, no hard contact to speak of, but yeah, not striking guys out. He three strikeouts last night, and you know the start before that he had zero, didn't he? Or like we're going through a stretch here where, you know, he's a guy who, you would think would be a guy who'd be striking out six or seven guys in a six inning start, and he's not that right now.
No, he's not. And yeah, only had the four strikeouts in seven innings yesterday, which is fine if you can get through seven innings and you give up soft contact. It is not a recipe for sustained success because, you know, every once in a while you're going to give up the bloops like you did at Yankee Stadium, and then one home run turns into a three-run home run.
Well, and he also, you know, he left with two guys on base.
Yep.
And nobody out because he pitched into the eighth, and then Phelps came in and did a really nice job of getting them out of that situation. So the number could have looked a little bit worse at the end too.
But it didn't.
They won. And they won, as you say, they won the series, and they're facing a guy tonight.
Yeah.
Who, in theory, if you're going to get all these right-hand bats, there's some of them are starting to look better. But if you're going to get guys feeling comfortable and confident, a left-hander who throws soft and this should be and doesn't strike a lot of guys out,
yeah,
you would think this would help.
Yeah, Marco Gonzalez against Kevin Gausman seems like a nice recipe for a series sweep and then a day off tomorrow and then maybe the worst team in all of baseball for the weekend. As predicted by me, this could be the time for that run that the numbers would suggest is around the corner. So I know they mentioned it on Blair and Barker this morning. Buster Olney.
Oh, I love this. I just stumbled onto this today, and first thing this morning as I was kind of doing my morning surf, and you know, I actually saw the, and I didn't realize Buster had written it at first, and I thought this is a rando thing, and yeah, sure. But then I saw Buster had written, and I thought, you know, Buster's pretty credible. Yeah. And I don't think it's going to happen, but This will make me happy for the whole day.
Yeah, well, so there's an unnamed anonymous Major League Baseball front office source quoted throughout this thing. But yeah, it's talking about the start of maybe trade season in Major League Baseball. But we know it usually takes place a lot closer to the deadline. Very few teams that wade into the trade waters in May especially, but even June, right? Like, it was an incredible coup that the Blue Jays were able to get Adam Simber and, mm-hmm. and Trevor Richards when they did, which I think was June last year.
Yes.
But Juan Soto is one of the best hitters in all of baseball.
Period.
And certainly one of the most patient.
Yep.
He also plays on one of the worst teams in all of baseball.
Yes.
And he also plays on a team that might be changing owners real soon. Like, real, real soon. He also needs a new contract, but not imminently.
Nope.
He's under team control through the 2024 season. So that's this year, that's next year, and that's a year beyond that. Would the Washington Nationals be open to trading the slugging left-handed corner outfielder? And if they did, wouldn't the Blue Jays be just the absolute perfect landing spot? To that, I would say, yeah.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Which part should we start with? So the Nationals are awful.
Yes.
And you know, for those of you who hadn't been paying attention since they won the World Series, like, they're really, really bad, and they're going to be bad for some time.
Mm-hmm.
They are on the market. So Mr. Werner et al. are trying to sell them. And there's, you know, two ways to kind of max out your value here. One would be to try and extend Juan Soto and say he's part of what we're selling you, and the other would be to get rid of as much cost as possible, pare this thing down right to the wood, and then sell that. You know, Soto's a Boris client. He's, as you say, is one of the best players in baseball. Like, what number should we put on it? Five? Certainly best 10.
Yep.
But maybe a best 5.
Mm-hmm. Depends on what you value. If you really do value on base and, like, having a good eye, because the power numbers are there, but mm-hmm. he hasn't yet to crack 40 homers in a season, but he will get on base, like, given the opportunity. Like, I think his career on base is about 400, but yeah, in a good lineup, the sky's the limit.
And
on base.
And he, by the way, hits from the left side.
Yeah.
So that's, if you're talking about kind of the perfect fit. So yeah, he's a guy who probably is going to go to market after that. After the 24 season, is that right? So yeah, he's going to, you know, Scott Boras' client, have to be a hell of an extension. Well, we know what that extension would look like, because we've seen a couple of them in baseball. Like, not the bargain Acuna extension, but one of the ones where you actually have to pay market value for
it. Would be the biggest contract in the history of Major League Baseball.
There we go.
Like, today, and it's more likely the discussion that we had about Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and Bo Bichette, that the number would be so astronomically high, so impossibly high, that you might as well just go into the open market and play with the big boys at that number, because there's almost no number that he would sign at this moment.
No, I don't think there is. So let's say that's off the table, mm-hmm. right? That even if you wanted to do that. So then, if you're trying to sell that team and it's non-competitive, and it looks like it's going to be non-competitive for the last 2 years of his contract in addition to this one, well, what do you do? It's not crazy that, you know, it's not, and that's why why Buster wrote the story. Now, and then the Blue Jay part of it, which of course is lots of fun to talk about, even if it never comes to pass, but it's perfect, because yeah, he'll get paid in arbitration over those 2 years. He's getting paid reasonably well this year. He'll get paid very well in his last 2 years of arb.
Yeah. He's going to set records, because he's already making $17 million in arbitration. And this is, I think, year two, and he has two more years of arbitration to go.
But you do it here. Like, look, this is a play like a big market team. He's a perfect fit. And he would look, and he's also going to cost you a bundle, right?
Yeah.
Because for two and a half years of control of one of the best players in baseball, like, we've never seen that deal, really. Like, I'm not even sure where you start and where it ends in terms of what you could ask. But why wouldn't you do that?
Well, why wouldn't you? I mean, it obviously starts with Gabriel Moreno.
Yes.
Who's still, you know, he's hitting, well, I think he had a 3-hit game yesterday.
But what he's done yesterday or whatever, we know what he is, right?
He's a top 10 prospect in all of Major League Baseball, playing a premium position and playing it well, apparently.
Yes.
Defensively.
So start with him, probably throw in Aroldis Martinez.
Sure. And then you want Nate Pearson too?
Yeah, but Nate Pearson's, I don't know what Nate Pearson's value is right now.
And the clock has already started on him. You need somebody whose clock has yet to start.
You need some of these unblemished guys.
Yes.
Right? So, because Nate, for reasons that are not his fault, is blemished at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, let's start with those two guys. There's some pitching in the lower part of the Blue Jays system that is very exciting to people right now.
Yeah.
They're not going to want somebody off your major league roster. They don't want anybody to have to pay.
No.
So they're not going to come looking for, you know, like we can talk about, you know, Lourdes Gurriel's included in every trade, but
yeah,
they don't want him. No, they don't want those guys. They're going to want the best futures, a collection of the best prospects, probably be the best collection of prospects ever traded for a baseball player.
Yeah. And shouldn't they give it to them?
Yes, they should.
So I'm not sure whether this is going to happen now, because the Washington Nationals do have the benefit of time, right? There's two more years of team control beyond this.
Yep.
Certainly if they get to the offseason of 2023, that is go time for trading. But maybe they think the interest and the price will be higher this offseason. Maybe that's when it happens. But yeah, it is an interesting time in the history of that organization, and the ownership thing adds this whole different wrinkle to it.
And his trade value is at its highest today.
Yeah.
Because it's the most control.
Mm-hmm.
So every day that ticks off the calendar, you are selling less. Now you're selling less of still an amazing commodity. So yeah, if you sold him the following offseason, you get a ton for him. Mm-hmm. If you sold him the offseason after that, you'd still get a ton. As a one-year rental, you'd still get a boatload for him. But for 2.5 years of this guy,
mm-hmm.
like that, you could reset your entire organization. Now, not all those prospects necessarily are going to pan out. We know that. But that's if you wanted to kind of say, okay, we're out of it. We're not going to win the next 2 years anyway. And we don't think we can sign this guy to an extension. Because as you said, it's just not possible unless he really, really wants to come back and we'll give you some kind of a discount or wants security. But if he wanted security, he wouldn't have hired Scott Boras.
Correct.
Right? He wants to get value.
Yep.
Then why wouldn't you? You know, I guess you're going to alienate your fans in Washington, but you'd already delivered a World Series to those fans.
That's right.
And
we're still in the grace period, right?
I think, and I'm not, it's a crappy market. I'm not sure. Like, I'm still not totally convinced about Washington as a baseball market. But you gave him a World Series. You stink right now. You're going to stink next year.
Yeah.
Hmm. It seemed, you know, when I first saw it, I said, this makes no sense whatsoever. And then by the end of it, and through the afternoon, as I was thinking about it driving in today, I thought, yeah, that all kind of fits.
You know where it also kind of fits? Everywhere else. Like anybody else that has an opportunity to even make the playoffs this year, and that becomes a talking point. The Washington Nationals let it be known that this guy is on the market. It is going to be a feeding frenzy. And
however.
Yeah.
Okay, here's my however.
Okay.
You have to be a contending team.
Correct.
With a significant payroll,
mm-hmm.
with a whole lot of prospect capital.
Yep.
Those three things have to be true.
Yeah.
So you can't just be a contending team in a smaller market where you're not going to take on, because he's going to cost you money, mm-hmm. as we said, the next couple of years. You're not going to be a non-contending team. And again, the list of contending teams is not that long right now. You know, it's not half of baseball,
no.
but a third of baseball.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to have significant prospect capital. And again, those two things don't, you know, often contending teams don't have a ton of prospect capital.
And you know what? The publicly available prospect publications are not the be-all, end-all, and they're not what front offices go on.
No.
But if we are going on that, mm-hmm. like you're not just making up the Aurelvis Martinez and Gabriel Moreno stuff. Like, those guys
are
well-regarded. And some of the Blue Jays' arms, they're starting to rise through the ranks. I think people are starting to take note now, and, you know, they're getting some pretty aggressive minor league placements. The dots do seem to connect here. I mean, is it a fun radio topic?
It sure. absolutely is, yes.
Have we done this before, maybe with Freddie Freeman? Perhaps.
Perhaps.
But, yeah, it's, Buster Olney, not just some guy off the street.
Not just some guy off the street, and I, from a Washington point of view, as unthinkable as it would be if you were a fan, you'd say, no, do not let this guy go. He's the biggest star on the team. He's one of the biggest stars in baseball. He's fun to watch. We got a World Series with him. You cannot do this, but you just know that you can do it. It's mm-hmm. been done. It's happened a million times. Maybe not on this scale, but hometown heroes have been traded away. And again, from a Jays point of view, I'm not sure what price I wouldn't pay.
Yeah, no, me too.
If we're talking prospects.
Well, and it's not going to be anybody that's on your major league roster.
No, and you're what's the goal? You know, like win now, it's a cliche,
yeah.
But they're in win now mode.
Yeah, and the window is not, it's, I mean, it's, I guess as long as Vlad and Bo are under team control, but, you know, when you go into the final years of those deals, you better be pretty close. And Matt Chapman's under team control for this year and next year.
Yes.
Like, I think 3 years, you know, by the end of the 2024 season, you better have done something by yes. that point.
Well, and here's the, and somebody out there is going to say, but if you do this, then you can't extend Vladdy and extend Bo and extend, well, you're not going to. I got news for you, right? It's number one, I think this team, this organization with success will be able to carry significantly more payroll than it's carrying right now. And it may not ever be the Dodgers, but, and it may never be in the luxury tax, but it's going to be pretty darn close because of the size of the market and the pay. And we're, you know, look, we're even seeing that this year, Ben, like that if as you know, Seattle games, midweek Seattle games are drawing 24,000 people, like that's not mind blowing, but it's pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And the TV ratings and all of that stuff. So, you know, you are that kind of organization. And I think everybody's got to kind of be realistic about the whole Bo Vladdy plan here for everything. It might happen. It would be lovely if it happened, but it's up to them. Mm-hmm. And that, I don't think either of those guys are going to rush into that. Let's say you had all three of them and that was your concern about if you extended two of those three,
yeah.
I don't care which two.
Yeah.
You'd be fine.
Yeah, and as long as, you know, they're all wearing World Series rings.
Yeah.
You can definitely sell that to the fan base, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So don't worry about what's going to happen 3 years from now. Worry about the next, just imagine the next 2 years with that guy, 2.5 years with that guy playing for the team.
I'd hit him second. I would move. I would go, yeah, Springer, Soto, Vlad, and then I would throw. I like Bo hitting four. I like that's pretty good top four. No,
isn't that fun?
Anyways, that was today's top story, brought to you by Thornhill Toyota. I lied about the Leaf thing because I'm gonna spin yesterday's Stanley Cup playoff results into a Leaf conversation.
Okay,
because the Lightning put it on the Panthers in Game One.
Oh, I know where you're going here. It's not so bad. They lost in seven.
No.
But they're really good.
No. Well, it's kind of along those lines, but here's the way I would phrase it. Doesn't this front office need the Lightning to be good?
They need them to not lose another game.
Well, because here, there's a non-zero possibility that, hey, you know, the banged up Braden Point and this team without that third line that was the driving force of those first two Stanley Cup championships and like kind of an okay Andre Vasilevsky, that they're not going deep. They're not the same team that won two straight Stanley Cups and all this, you know, this lip service to the fan base about making progress and right there neck and neck with the Stanley Cup contender. It looks silly when they get waxed by the President's Trophy champions in five games, which still may happen.
Still may happen.
But it didn't. Isn't that on the line? The way it was messaged to us by Brendan Shanahan and Kyle Dubas, that was an incredible accomplishment getting to Game 7. It was a one-goal game.
Just keeping it close. Just keeping it close was... here's the one problem with that, and it's not... I know it's not an absolute comparable, but last year in the first round, they lost in seven games to a team that went to the Stanley Cup Finals.
Oh, yeah. That's...
How'd that feel?
No, you're right. That didn't mitigate it.
Not at all.
No, it didn't.
Not one bit. No. So that's the one issue. Now, that was a fluke. It's not a fluke. If you win three rounds, it's not a fluke, right? No such thing as a fluke.
No.
If you get to the Stanley Cup
Finals. They deserve to be there.
Except that this year they reverted to being like the worst team in hockey.
Right.
So, yeah, I don't know. But I know people are going to kind of look at it that way. I think it's an absolutely natural thing to do to say, oh, well, who just beat us?
Mm-hmm.
And are they really, really great?
Well, but it's not just the fan base. It's, again, it's the people in charge who told you to view it that way.
Yeah.
Well, they told you that was the bar. It's like, hey, it happened in the first round, but look at that team. They've won two straight Stanley Cups, and look at our regular season.
And they got the firm handshake, right? That's don't forget the firm handshake.
They respected us.
Yes.
Yeah, no, I'm keeping an eye on it.
Okay.
I don't think as a fan it should give you, you know.
Comfort?
No.
because you rightly pointed out that the Montreal Canadiens were, I was going to say the Eastern Conference representative, but whatever that half of the bracket representative in the Stanley Cup final is.
Yeah, that didn't hurt them either, by the way. Don't you're complicating it. Don't do that. I liked it the other way.
They went through Winnipeg and yeah.
I liked it. It's better the other way.
Anyways, Battle of Alberta starts tonight as well.
Yes.
Which has some juice.
It does. I actually think this is a tricky one, right? Because the Flames are really good and they could legitimately win the whole, they could be the first Canadian team since, 93. That is right. Yeah.
Yeah. Montreal Canadiens in 93.
Yes, I missed my, yes. You're 93. Montreal over the Kings. They could win the Stanley Cup. Like they're good. There's a couple of huge obstacles there, including Colorado, who that was fun last night. It was close.
Yeah.
But I still think they're the guys. But yeah, I think Calgary's capable of rolling, winning this whole thing. But the better story is Edmonton.
Yeah.
Because, and that's, the folks in Calgary are going to hate everything about this, but the notion of the best player in hockey finally winning a Stanley Cup. Mm-hmm. It's one, look, we've been through this with, others, like when Sid won his first, when he won his first Stanley Cup, that was the story, right? And you could kind of wrap your head around it. Even if you were neutral, you would say, this is a generational player. It's one of the greatest players I've ever seen. And now this team accomplishment, he's finally got this, tick that box. He's done it. And, and Gretzky won a bunch of them, obviously, and Mario won cups. But, to have a guy who's kind of on that list, you kind of think, well, this has got to be part of it at some point. And it's obviously been the opposite for the Oilers and what they've gone through in terms of the playoffs or non-playoff years. So that's the sexy story right now. That's the best storyline that's left in the playoffs.
The way I view it is that the Flames are the favorites, but there's more pressure on the Oilers to win the series.
Yeah.
Yeah, right? Like, because the Flames are actually the better team, right? Like, if you just apply logic, the regular season standings, all of it, they look like a playoff-tested team. They have the Stanley Cup-winning head coach. They have all the pieces. They win 1-0, 2-1 games. That's what they do. But the other team has the best player maybe on planet Earth and maybe in the history of the sport.
Yeah.
And any season that goes by where he's not winning a Stanley Cup is an affront to nature.
Well, you kind of want to complete the story somehow.
Yeah.
And you're right. Yeah, the Flames, look, they're coming off a series where they did go to overtime in Game 7, but they faced one of the most insane goaltending performances you're ever going to see. You can put anybody on that list.
That's right.
So, yeah, they're a complete team. They're well coached. They're just not as much fun from a narrative point of view.
Mm. I do love listening to Daryl Sutter's media availability.
He's the best. He is the best. I'm not sure I'd want to cover him for a whole season. I don't know if I'd want to be a beat guy.
Yeah.
But for when you drop in every once in a while, he's a blast.
Yeah. Eric Francis does cover him for a living. We'll talk to Eric later on in the program. But when we come back, get back into the Jays, talk to Keegan Matheson of MLB.com next. As the Fan Drive Time continues, Ben Ennis, Stephen Braun, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Unrivaled insight, analysis, and opinions on all things Blue Jays. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Fan Drive Time, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Ben Ennis and Stephen Brunt. Stephen, explain to me the relationship that Atlantic provinces have, the citizens of Atlantic provinces have between each other. Like, the fine folks from Newfoundland and Labrador, how do they feel about Nova Scotians?
Well, they're kind of separate, right? Because in Newfoundland, I'll say we, because I pay taxes there. But yeah, they're kind of apart, right? So because they're a 7-hour ferry ride from the closest point, Nova Scotia. So they think of themselves as Atlantic Canadians, but not, see, that's the difference between the Atlantic Canada and the Maritimes. They're not Maritimers.
Oh, okay.
So they're a nation, and they were an independent country.
That's right.
For a little while, very little while. So they think of themselves as separate.
Mm.
I would say they feel more kin to those folks than they do to certain other people in Canada.
Okay. So there will be no animosity between you, who is, you know, a Hamiltonian. But
I am Hamiltonian,
Newfoundlander, sort of, kind of. And Keegan Matheson of MLB.com, who's a proud Nova Scotian. How's it going, Keegan?
It's doing well. You know, if I could trade New Brunswick for Newfoundland in the Maritimes, I think Nova Scotia would throw in a draft pick or two.
Yeah, see, New Brunswick gets a bad rap, right? Because people just drive through it very quickly on a highway, and that's it, right? That's kind of, and they go to see the tide in the Bay of Fundy.
It
gets a bad rap, but, you know, you may not be wrong.
Yeah. Okay, there's a real rivalry between Nova Scotia and New Brunswick, I think, is what we've established then, Keegan.
That's what we're getting to. It's a lovely place to drive through to get to Nova Scotia.
I feel like you're putting on your Nova Scotian accent for this, but keep it rolling. All right, let's look back before we look ahead a little bit here, Keegan, because we talked about Jose Berríos in the opening block and about his season up until yesterday's start. Was like not overly concerning because there were you know, mitigating factors. That start in Cleveland was horrible weather, and then, you know, he got Yankee Stadium but the numbers were career worst basically across the board. Were there any concerns about Jose Berríos leading into that start? And even still, there's only 4 strikeouts in the 7 innings pitched. What have you made of Berríos' start to the season?
You do want to see some more strikeouts, because those timely ground balls, like that one with the bases loaded in the second inning, that's not always going to come. But with Berríos, I don't think there are many pitchers in baseball with a better track record these last 5 years. His ERA is the same every year. He's always throwing 190 innings, and that's rare. That's extremely rare at this point, to have a guy who's throwing a lot of innings, doing it well every single year. So Berríos earned patience with that, but it was strange to see him starting like that, because he didn't look terrible. There was never a time where he lost the strike zone, where he really got tuned up by a lineup. Everything was always just a bit off, just a little bit. So there was always confidence that would come back. You do want to see some more strikeouts, but Berríos should be really the rock at the top of this rotation. We haven't noticed it as much because Gausman has been great. Manoah's been great. The lineup has been kind of wonky here, looking to get going. So we've had a lot else to talk about. But Berríos looks back to himself now, and if they have that, that's a big 3 at the top of the rotation.
Well, I was going to say, Keegan, the luxury they have right now is that if he is, you know, if he's the guy we saw last night, which is, you know, there wasn't a lot of swing and miss in that game, but he managed his way through that Seattle lineup very effectively, and he gave them length, right? He got into the 8th inning. If he's that guy, that is fine. If he was the absolute, had to be the ace of this staff, and obviously, he was the opening day starter, but they just gave him the big extension, and it was all kind of hanging on his shoulders. Maybe have a little bit different discussion, but with Manoah and Gausman there, it just doesn't feel that way.
Absolutely. That context matters. And with Berríos as well, you don't need to throw the ace tag on him, or really on anybody in this rotation. Maybe you don't have your Jacob deGrom, but most teams don't. You have to feel good if you're the Blue Jays going 3 deep right now. Maybe that gets to 4, seeing on how Ryu and Kikuchi do these next couple of months. But every conversation we have about this team needs to be within a postseason context eventually. And at that point, you want a Game 2 starter, a Game 3 starter. And, man, if you are rolling out Alek Manoah in a Game 2 or Game 3, you feel good, because he has been just fantastic this year. You know, lots of talk about, would it be a sophomore slump? And he rejected that idea every single time, and he said it's the other way around. I'm the guy who has more information now, which is absolute peak Manoah philosophy, but man, he has been spectacular.
Yeah, he has, as has the guy that's going tonight, who looks very acey to me. We're talking about Kevin Gausman. And you know what? The bullpen got it done yesterday. Absolutely, they did, and they're down a couple of men. Jordan Romano still dealing with, I guess, the illness. Maybe you can update us on his status for tonight's game. And of course, Tim Mays is still out. And maybe you can give us an update on that as well. But yeah, they're 27th in reliever K per 9, Keegan. Again, like, you can have outings where you get it done, and Adam Simber, that's not going to change for him. I mean, if you're looking at one area where this team can improve, is that not it?
It is. And I think even entering the season, when you looked ahead to the trade deadline and projected that, it was probably all along going to need to be a high-end reliever. Now, with Romano, he's got that GI infection right now, and it's going to be a few more days. They don't think it'll be an ICL stint at this point. And then Meza, the good news is that they believe it's just the forearm, nothing to do with the elbow that was surgically repaired. So we'll see a timeline there. But this is a bullpen that does need to strike more guys out. Now, Simber is the outlier. He is going to throw strange and sidearm and confuse hitters, force weak contact. That's great. But otherwise, they need to miss some bats. They need to have guys who can come in with a runner on third and one out or no outs in the inning and get out of that. And it's kind of been an issue for the Blue Jays. When you look back, even the last 5, 6, 7 years, they were a little behind on velocity relievers. They were a little slower to get those 98-100-mile-an-hour guys. Now they're trying to catch up in terms of strikeouts. So that is something you're seeing a ton of in the minor leagues. Some of the prospects are having great seasons, but you need it here. And I think that's going to be a priority, especially as we get close to the deadline. This team will need some more firepower to put back there beside Meza and Romano when those guys are back.
Keegan, this, when you talk about the velocity swing and miss stuff, like there's two guys, you know, in the organization who would be a huge help if they could get them straightened out or get them healthy. One is Julian Merriweather, who is, you know, is a puzzle, but, you know, is a guy who has thrown 100. And the other is Nate Pearson, who seems to be on a very slow trajectory back to facing even live hitters. What is the thinking organizationally about those two guys right now?
Yeah, when you look back at those two, with Merriweather, of course, we think of that first week last year throwing 101 with a ridiculous slider. And with Pearson, you think about that AL wildcard series game against the Rays. 2 perfect innings, 5 strikeouts. They looked unbelievable. But the trick is doing that more than once, and we've seen that's a challenge in both cases. Now, Merriweather, thankfully, is just dealing with his stuff, is dealing with getting that velocity back. And his fastball is not one that moves a ton, so if it's only going 96, you're hitting it. It's going to get hit. He needs that 99-100 to play off of that slider. And the potential is there, but, again, you need the results. And with Pearson, you're right, this is a slow buildup. They want to get him to a bulky role, they call it, whether he's starting or leaving. It's going to be a high-powered Ross Stripling type of situation, I think. But, man, a guy who needs to prove it in the big leagues. You know, we have been talking about him for, it seems like, a decade as the X factor. You know, is this guy going to make it up this year and be that bullpen weapon or a surprise starter that really turns this around? But this is the tough stage with prospects. When it goes from the prospect stage where everything's exciting to actually having to prove it and do it. So at his age, with his talent, it has to be time. And when he's healthy, it's got to be time now for that to be tested. And I think that's a very valuable role. Like Stripling has shown to be able to go back and forth. But like you said, two guys who can strike hitters out, especially high leverage, which is exactly what this team needs. So even if one works out, that's found money.
Keegan, on Pearson, do you get a sense of, do they have any idea when they expect him at this stage? You know, again, he hasn't thrown to live hitters, as far as I know, coming off the mono thing. I think he's still throwing, you know, bullpens. So he's not ready for a rehab assignment even. Like, are we talking a month from now? More?
I think that would work as a rough timeline. His next stage, he threw a bullpen yesterday or the day before. Next stage is going to be facing instructional league, so just young prospect hitters down in Dunedin. And at that point, he'll need to continue building up. He'll need to do some rehab outings. And coming back from mono is such a tough one. Mm-hmm. You know, if this was an elbow sprain or a forearm tightness, we've heard that 100 times. We know how that works. But in terms of what weight did he drop, what muscle did he drop, how's he coming back from that? It's mono is not your common IL stint. So it's moving slower than I expected at this point, given how long he has been throwing. But he's got to get up into, I'd say, at least a couple of high minors, AAA outings first, and that's not the next step yet. So I think we're definitely talking in weeks still at this point.
Well, I've already traded him to the Nationals for Juan Soto if they want him, so that's their problem. No, we did have a little Juan Soto conversation, and I want to pose this to you, Keegan. The two guys at the top of the heap when it comes to the Blue Jays prospects are, of course, Gabriel Moreno, who's off to a pretty good start average-wise. He's hitting .323, but the extra base power has not been there at all, really. He's slugging under .400. And Aurelvis Martinez, who's slugging a trillion, but he also has 7 trillion strikeouts and, like, negative 7 trillion walks. So what have the Blue Jays thought of the start of the two prize prospects in this organization?
Yeah, put them together. You've got Mike Trout, I think. But
yes,
it's been a unique start. Now, Moreno had that slow start because of visa issues in spring training. He got off to a slower one, so I think that has to be part of it. But you need to see some power. He's driving the ball more. The Blue Jays like the exit velo numbers, the type of contact he's making. He's just not lifting it over the wall yet. So a lot of that focus is still on him defensively. and mostly how he manages a pitching staff. Because if you show up here and you are managing Kevin Gausman one day, Hyunjin Ryu the next, Alek Manoah, this is more about his mental game than about the physical tools that he has, which are clearly working. And then Aurelvis Martinez, man, we've talked about him as the biggest power bat in the Blue Jays system. It's soon time to talk about him as one of the most powerful young prospects in baseball, period, when you just talk about his raw power. But, and there's always a but with raw power, and it's usually strikeouts, and he is striking out a ton at this point. Now, if you're striking out a ton and you're also walking a ton, that's okay. You can be a three true outcomes guy and make it work. But that plate approach needs to change, because as he goes up through the minor leagues, especially AAA will be a great challenge for him, because a hitter like Aurelvis Martinez will run into a pitcher in AAA who is 32 years old, you know, pitched 5 years ago in the big leagues and has a big sloppy curveball that's going to make him chase and chase and chase. So veteran pitching will be a challenge for him, but the power tool is legitimately special, truly special. You know, Vladdy said that he reminds him a lot of Hanley Ramirez, which I think was a great comp for him. And the power is real. You know, he's got a chance to chase 40 home runs in the minor leagues this year at this pace. And that's not something you see a lot of from a kid that age.
I guess the other bit of, you know, and it's good news for the Jays' point of view, but is that on the Moreno front, there's not going to be, if he was tearing it up in Buffalo, maybe there would be that conversation about how is he going to force his way into the major leagues this year. But, you know, really with the way, you know, having Danny Jansen back, and I think people kind of appreciating Danny Jansen right now for the player the catcher he is today. But also the evolution of Alejandro Kirk's game. He's back hitting line drives again, which is, we all know he can do that. But Keegan, I think his evolution behind the plate in the last year is one of the really good stories on this team.
It has been. And going into this year, guys, I thought that Kirk might catch the odd game and really just be a DH. And he looked 10 times better than I expected behind the plate. Now, Charlie Montoyo loves his framing, how he receives the ball, especially low pitches. Because if Alejandro has one thing, it is a low center of gravity. He gets down and presents a good picture for his pitchers. But also his blocking and how he moves back there. You know, he is not a guy who is going to steal 50 bases or one base, but he can move quick enough where he wants him back behind the plate. And he's looked more natural than a lot of people expected, I think, even within the organization. So, like you said before that with Jansen as well, this is catching depth that a lot of organizations would be jealous of. Still at this point, even in the major leagues, before you talk about the number seven prospect in the entire league. So nothing they need to rush, which is a luxury. And at this point, especially if Jansen's hitting, I really like that leaning into the identity of a pole hitter that Jansen is doing. I think it's working. It makes a lot of sense. So there's really no rush at all. And it's a conversation the Blue Jays can stretch out as long as they need to.
Yeah, no problem behind the plate at all. Keegan, thanks for this. Enjoy the game today.
You got it, guys. Talk soon.
Sounds good. There's Keegan Mathieson from Nova Scotia and MLB.com. They don't like the New Brunswicker. I don't know anything about people from New Brunswick.
No, everybody rags on New Brunswick. Because
there's nobody to defend them?
Well, and it doesn't have the kind of the postcardy stuff, as much of the postcardy stuff that the other places, right? You know, yeah. They grow a lot of potatoes, just like PEI, but it doesn't have the, you know, all the nice beaches that PEI has, and doesn't have the spectacular coastline that Nova Scotia does, or all of the rough and tumble stuff the Newfoundland does. It's kind of, when you drive through, it's pleasant. It is a rolling and pleasant land. It's nice. But that's it. It's got a highway. It's like the Autobahn. So as Keegan alluded to, people who go east know that once you hit the New Brunswick Quebec border, you can just drive like the wind.
Is there really no speed limit?
I don't know. 110K, but it's the difference between Quebec and New Brunswick. Please don't mess this up. But in Quebec, there's kind of predatory speed enforcement. And New Brunswick, I've never seen any.
Really?
Ever. And it's a beautifully designed highway. And there's no traffic.
Mm-hmm.
So you just hold on. Just hold on to the wheel and go. It's the greatest highway in Canada. And it's very nice. St. John River Valley, very pretty.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, most people, they've put all of this money into a highway, the best highway in Canada. And then found that people were using it to get from one end of their province to the other, not necessarily stopping even for coffee.
Not stay, yeah. I couldn't tell you one thing that is, you're supposed to go to New Brunswick for. Circling back to the prospects that I mentioned, and yeah, Moreno, okay, that's all well and good. And if he's working on his defense, and again, it's not like he's off to a bad start.
No.
He just hasn't been pounding the ball over the fence. He's hitting over 300 and He hasn't taken a ton of walks, but he's not striking out either. Right?
No. There's nothing. There's no kind of sheen gone there prospect wise. He's just fine.
Yeah, and my whole thing about Aurelvis Martinez being the second baseman of the 2022 Blue Jays.
Well,
there's twofold. I mean, Santiago Espinal has taken that job by the absolute throat, and I feel like he's not going to give it up for another decade.
Yes. Yeah. No. He's been tremendous.
Yeah, Santiago Espinal, I think, can be like a nine hitter on any really good team because he's going to hit you about 300. And but you know how I know that? Because that's all he's done since he's ever been in the major leagues.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And now he's put on a little bit of bulk and extra base, blah, 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 blah. But Aurelvis Martinez is still an interesting prospect. But man, that is like the numbers are staggering twofold, right? He hit another home run yesterday. He's 11 home runs. He is slugging 574. And that is totally building up his 877 OPS because his on base is only 303. He has 37 strikeouts in 29 games and 6 walks. Like, I go back and forth on this, and we talked to Eno Saris about taking pitches and whether approaches can be learned. And we just talked about Juan Soto, who was quoted in that piece that I'm referencing, saying that, hey, in the minor league, somebody said, hey, why don't you just try not swinging at everything? And then he just did that and then became one of the most patient hitters in all of the land. Yeah, if that could somehow be imparted on this guy who obviously has insane raw talents.
Well, and how old is he? He's super young for the level.
Yeah, he's 20.
Yeah, so he's like 3 years younger than everybody else at the level. The flip side of that, you don't see the most sophisticated pitching in AA.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, it's a lot of straight stuff and a lot of some velocity, but it's not like you're going to get outfoxed by pitching at AA. Mm-hmm. Can be very hitter friendly. So he's striking out at that level a ton, but also mashing at that level. But you got time. He's very young, and the upside is super exciting there still.
It is, but I mean, back to our Juan Soto conversation.
Yeah, still trading for Juan Soto.
Well, I mean, definitely, even no matter what the answer to this is, but like organizationally, there is a decision-making process here that you have to decide, hey, is this guy actually going to figure it out and become one of the great hitters in Major League Baseball? Or is this, you know, somebody else looking at what he has accomplished with the power and understanding that the discipline hasn't arrived, but you could sell somebody else on figuring it out. Like the Austin Martin thing, I'm sure the Blue Jays didn't give up on Austin Martin, but they saw, hey man, like this guy isn't a great defender at any position, has no arm, and the power is not exactly there. Maybe he'll develop power. Hey, Jim Thome was a slap hitter in the minor leagues. Like there's lots and lots of guys like that, but then let somebody else dream on that. Of course, Barrios.
Well, then that's it. So there's two things. One is, yes, you should know more about your prospects than everybody else does. So both whether they're going to become a generational player or maybe they're going to plateau somewhere that everybody thinks is a little lower. Everybody else thinks they're going to plateau higher than what you know. Mm-hmm. So you unload them quick before people do figure them out. So that's one thing. The other thing is, even if they're going to be a great player, you might have to trade that guy to win now, to enhance your chances to win a World Series in the moment, because that's actually the goal.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of clutching prospects to your bosom and saying, no, you can't have them. I think we talk a ton about prospects in this era of baseball.
Yeah.
But, you know, a part of what they're there for is to be moved at the appropriate moment. And then another bunch of prospects come along and you hope you continue to renew that. So, yeah, you have to give up value to get value.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not just about hoodwinking somebody else. Sometimes you're going to give up somebody you really love.
Yeah, but if you can hoodwink them, that's good.
That's even better. Well, and there's some names that come to mind, right, where they just didn't super pan out. But, you know, so it happens.
No, I know, but you don't do it in good faith, right? Like, you don't hold something back, I guess.
No, you're not. They see them playing the same games as you see them playing.
That's right. Anyways, it's a conversation that, you know, we might continue with our next guest. And Adnan Virk of MLB Network, NHL Network, and the Cinephile Podcast joins us next as the Fan Drive Time continues. Ben Ennis, Stephen Brunt, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.